So I want you to imagine stepping onto a stage to claim basically the ultimate prize in your field.
Right.
You're looking out at this audience of peers who finally have to admit that you were right all along. And instead of taking a victory lap, you look at them and say, "We are doing this completely wrong."
It's quite the opening move.
It really is. And today we're doing a deep dive into the book Silicon Valley's Open Lab 2013 to 2022. Specifically, we're focusing on chapter 11, which is titled Do Not Imitate a Bird's Feathers.
Great chapter.
Yeah, we're going to figure out why Jan LeCun, who is, widely considered the father of modern AI, did exactly that. So let's set the scene. It's February 4th, 2016, 6 o'clock in the evening.
Right.
We're in Paris, France, inside this legendary institution, the Marguerite de Navarre Auditorium at the College de France.
And this is a place founded way back in, what, 1530?
Exactly. 1530. There are no exams here, no degrees. It's just pure intellectual pursuit. Michel Foucault taught here. And LeCun, who is a 55-year-old engineer at this point, steps to the podium.
And behind him, there's just a single line of text on the screen.
Yeah. It just reads deep learning, a revolution in AI.
Which, it really was the pinnacle of a long, pretty bruising career for him.
Oh, definitely.
He was there delivering his inaugural lecture as the annual chair of informatics and digital sciences. And for decades, he had championed neural networks.
Right, which people did not always love.
No, not at all. It was this computational architecture that much of the academic establishment had just actively mocked. They starved it of funding. They dismissed it as a total developmental dead end.
And now standing on that stage in 2016, deep learning is suddenly powering, well, pretty much every major tech platform on Earth.
Exactly. The long winter of his career was definitively over. But he wasn't there to celebrate.
No.
He used this moment of absolute vindication to sound a massive alarm about the fundamental direction of artificial intelligence.
And he sets up this warning so brilliantly because before he even drops his main thesis, he flashes these mind-boggling statistics about the biological human brain on the screen.
To kind of ground everyone.
Yeah, exactly. He reminds the audience that the human brain contains roughly 85 billion neurons,
85 billion.
and every single one of those neurons connects to about 10,000 other cells.
Which is just, it's hard to even wrap your head around.
It totals 1 quadrillion connections,
Yeah.
all packed into a wet mass that weighs just 1.4 kilograms.
Right.
And he points out that the outer layer, the cortex, is only 2 millimeters thick. But if you stretched out all the biological wiring folded up inside it, the thread would run for 180,000 kilometers.
Wow.
That's enough physical wiring to wrap around the Earth more than 4 times, and it operates on the wattage of a dim light bulb.
Right, inside a space the size of your two hands.
Exactly.
And he deliberately grounds the room in those numbers to establish this baseline truth, which is that physical, tangible, highly efficient intelligence is computationally possible.
Because we have the proof right in our heads.
Exactly. The biological hardware sitting inside our skulls proves that the physics of intelligence work. So, having established that this marvel exists, he brings the whole auditorium to a standstill with a really provocative question.
Oh, I love this part.
He asked the crowd, "If we want to build a truly intelligent machine, should we try to perfectly copy this biological brain? Like, should we mathematically simulate its chemistry, its ion channels, and its synapses inside a supercomputer?"
And the room just goes completely quiet.
Pin drop silence.
And he delivers this single word answer in French. He just says, no,
No.
which was a very targeted strike. He wasn't just being, philosophical up there. He was taking direct aim at these massive, heavily funded European scientific projects that were happening at that exact moment.
Right, they had tons of funding.
Huge funding. And they were operating on this assumption that if you just pour staggering amounts of money and electricity into perfectly simulating the human brain at a microscopic cellular level, a functioning mind will just spontaneously emerge from the simulation.
Which is, I mean, those mega projects were essentially acting as incredibly expensive biological copy machines.
Yeah.
And LeCun's argument dismantled this approach by separating the medium from the message.
What do you mean by that?
Well, the biological mechanisms of the brain, so the wetware, the proteins, the neurotransmitters, they are just one highly specific evolutionary solution for achieving intelligence.
Right.
Copying the brain's chemistry is not the same thing as understanding the underlying principles of intelligence. If you map a billion simulated synapses, but you don't understand the mathematical optimization that dictates why the network adjusts its connections, well, you haven't built a mind.
You've just built a map.
Exactly. You've built a highly detailed topographical map of a city without understanding the economic laws that make the city actually function.
You know, reading this, I kept thinking of it like trying to build a spaceship by finding an alien spacecraft crashed in the desert.
Oh, that's a great analogy.
Right. Because if you meticulously reverse engineer the physical shape of it, you know, the aerodynamic curves of the hull, the exact placement of all the cockpit buttons, but you have absolutely no idea what the underlying physics of its anti-gravity engine are, it's never going to fly.
Not a chance.
You've just built a beautiful, incredibly expensive sculpture. So if simulating biological wetware is a trap, how does LeCun actually propose we find that propulsion engine?
Well, he reaches back into the history of human flight to demonstrate the solution. And he brings up this cautionary tale that's really famous in France about a guy named Clément Ader.
Okay.
In 1890, Ader was this brilliant inventor who was just desperate to conquer the sky. So he looked at nature, specifically at bats.
Bats, okay.
And he built a flying machine called the Ael. He used silk and bamboo to perfectly mimic the biological shape of a bat's wings, stretched them out of this massive width, strapped a heavy steam engine to the frame, and just fired it up.
And the wild part of the story is that it actually moved.
It did.
It lifted off the ground and hovered about 20 centimeters off the grass for, what, 50 meters?
Yeah, about 50 meters, which technically made it the first time a powered machine lifted itself off level ground.
But it was a complete dead end.
Total dead end.
Because Ader completely missed the physics. He copied the biological form of the wing, but his machine had no control mechanisms.
Right. He couldn't steer it at all.
He couldn't stabilize it in a crosswind. He thought the secret to flight was embedded in the literal shape of the bat, rather than in the invisible mathematical forces of the air.
Exactly. Ader's failure wasn't just bad luck. It was a fundamental misunderstanding of physics. And to show the audience what a successful approach actually looks like, LeCun pointed them to 1903 and the Wright brothers.
The classic example.
Right. Two bicycle mechanics from Ohio who didn't use a single feather. They didn't design wings that flapped. Instead, what do? They built wind tunnels.
They focused on the invisible stuff.
Exactly. They painstakingly measured airflow, derived lift coefficients, and studied the invisible dynamics of pressure. They discarded the superficial appearance of biological birds so they could master the underlying mathematical principles of aerodynamics.
And that is the core philosophy that gives Chapter 11 its title. Do not imitate a bird's feathers.
Right there.
LeCun was telling the scientific community that to achieve true artificial intelligence, we have to stop obsessing over the biological intricacies of human neurons and instead search for the aerodynamics of intelligence.
Which is such a powerful phrase.
It really is. And looking through the sources, this immediately brought to mind Richard Feynman's concept of cargo cult science.
Oh, from his 1974 commencement address.
Yes, exactly. Feynman talked about South Pacific Islanders during World War II. The American military set up bases on their islands, built runways, and planes were constantly landing, bringing this immense wealth of cargo, food, and supplies.
Right, a total shock to their way of life.
Huge. But then, when the war ended, the military left, and the planes stopped coming. But the islanders wanted the cargo to return, so they engaged in this incredible surface-level mimicry.
Right, they built fake runways out of wood.
Yes. They put a man in a wooden box with bamboo antennas on his head, perfectly mimicking a radio operator.
Wow.
They perfected the aesthetic look of an airfield, fully expecting the planes to just start landing again. But, of course, no planes landed.
Because they didn't understand the vast global logistics network.
Or the manufacturing bases, the geopolitical forces, none of the underlying reality that actually brought the planes there. They merely copied the form.
And that perfectly frames the question LeCun was asking the AI community in 2016.
Right. Are we doing the same thing with modern AI? By dumping unbelievable amounts of electricity, computing power, and massive data sets into neural networks without truly understanding the principles of how intelligence fundamentally forms, are we just building modern digital fake runways?
I mean, building a massive supercomputer, wiring it up like a biological brain, and hoping intelligence magically descends from the cloud, that is the textbook definition of cargo cult AI.
Yeah, you have the form, but you lack the substance.
Exactly. You're acting like a shaman hoping to summon a spirit, rather than an engineer building a system based on proven principles.
Well put.
LeCun firmly believes that once we let go of this obsession with biological mimicry, we can build machines that think and learn in ways entirely alien and maybe even superior to the human brain.
Just like flight.
Right. Just as a modern commercial jetliner flies faster, higher, and more efficiently than any biological bird ever could, true AI is going to operate on principles optimized for silicon, not carbon.
Okay, I'm struggling to reconcile this a bit, though.
How so?
Well, LeCun builds neural networks, and these are famously opaque, data-hungry black boxes, yet he has this incredibly stubborn conviction that they must learn these underlying principles on their own from the ground up without human programmers handing them a bunch of rigid, pre-programmed rules.
Right.
That sounds almost contradictory. Like, how did he arrive at this specific philosophy that machines have to figure out the aerodynamics for themselves?
The origin of that conviction is actually fascinating.
Yeah.
It goes back to a specific moment in 1980.
Okay, let's hear it.
Picture a 20-year-old Yann LeCun sitting in an engineering school library in Paris. He pulls a book off the shelf that ends up dictating the entire trajectory of his life.
Just a random library book?
Essentially, yeah. It's a French translation of a famous philosophical debate that took place in 1975 at the Royaumont Abbey. And this was a clash of absolute titans in the world of cognitive science.
He was debating.
On one side, you had Noam Chomsky, the legendary linguist. Chomsky argued that human intelligence, especially language, is based on innate rules.
Meaning we're born with them.
Exactly. We are born with a mental framework, like a biological pre-compiled rule book already hardwired into our heads.
Which, in the context of AI, represents what we now call good old-fashioned AI or symbolic AI, right?
Yep.
That was the reigning dogma for decades. This belief that if human programmers just map out enough logical rules, write enough if-then statements, and hard-code them into a computer, the machine will eventually achieve intelligence.
Right. But opposing Chomsky at this Royaumont debate was the pioneering developmental psychologist Jean Piaget.
Okay.
Piaget violently disagreed with the idea of a pre-packaged genetic rulebook. He argued that intelligence is constructed from the ground up.
How so?
He said a child operates as a tiny scientist experiencing the physical world. They stack blocks, they knock them over, they make mistakes, and they slowly build an internal model of physics and logic through direct interaction with reality.
So the intelligence itself isn't pre-programmed.
Exactly. The intelligence isn't pre-programmed. The ability to learn is.
So LeCun is sitting in the library reading this transcript, and he instantly sides with Piaget.
Completely.
He looks at the real world and realizes it is far too messy, too chaotic, and just full of exceptions for human programmers to ever manually write down all the symbolic rules.
You could never hard code reality.
Right. If a machine is going to navigate reality, it has to learn from raw data, just like Piaget's child bumping into furniture.
Yeah. But what truly hooked LeCun wasn't just the philosophy in that book. It was a glaring, almost unbelievable contradiction he found buried in the text of the debate.
What was the contradiction?
Well, at the Royaumont debate, an MIT mathematician named Seymour Papert stood up to support Piaget's theory of constructed intelligence.
Okay.
And to prove that learning from scratch was mathematically possible, Papert pointed to early neural networks, which were then called perceptrons, as the ultimate proof of concept.
Wait, Papert praised neural networks?
Yes. And the contradiction that caught LeCun's eye was that just a few years prior, in 1969, that very same Seymour Papert, along with Marvin Minsky, had published a devastating book that aggressively attacked and essentially dismantled the entire field of neural network research.
Oh, wow. Yeah, they mathematically proved the severe limitations of single-layer perceptrons.
Right.
They showed they couldn't even solve basic nonlinear logic puzzles, like the XOR problem. And that single book dried up government funding overnight. It caused the first AI winter, where neural network research was suddenly treated like academic poison.
So think about what LeCun is seeing here. You have a towering intellect praising neural networks as the proof of how intelligence forms in one setting, while simultaneously authoring the book that effectively killed the field in another.
That's crazy. I mean, a typical engineering student would read that, conclude the field was a toxic, unsolvable mess, and just switch majors?
But LeCun saw blood in the water. He deduced that if these brilliant minds were contradicting themselves this badly, there had to be a massive, unsolved architectural mystery sitting right there.
And Minsky and Papert had only proven the limitations of simple single-layer networks, right?
Precisely. LeCun theorized that adding multiple hidden layers and finding a mathematical way to train them could pick the lock. He realized neural networks weren't a dead end at all. They were merely incomplete.
So he spends the next 40 years picking that lock. He champions backpropagation. He invents convolutional neural networks that basically allow machines to see, and he slowly, painfully drags the entire academic world toward his perspective.
Which brings us to the profound irony of his career.
Tell me about it.
By 2018, the lock is picked. Deep learning has conquered the globe. He is the head of FAIR, that's Facebook AI Research. He is managing hundreds of the brightest computational minds on the planet.
He's won.
He has effectively won the 40-year war that started in that Paris library. And what does he do?
He steps down.
He walks into a room with Mark Zuckerberg and Mike Schroepfer, the CTO of Facebook, and tells them he is stepping down.
Unbelievable. This is early 2018.
Early 2018. Yeah. He hands the day-to-day management of the laboratory to two trusted colleagues, Jules Pinault and Antoine Bordes, and he takes the title of Chief AI Scientist.
Because he's staring down his 60th birthday, right at the absolute zenith of global tech power, and he just vacates the corner office. Why?
To go back to standing in front of a whiteboard. I mean, managing a massive research lab means your days are consumed by budget meetings, performance reviews, negotiating computing resources, corporate diplomacy.
All the administrative stuff.
Right. Your time to sit quietly, stare at algorithms, and do fundamental mathematics just vanishes. He stepped down because he saw the AI revolution he helped trigger veering onto a path he fundamentally disagreed with, and he needed uninterrupted time to build an alternative.
And this alternative is what he called self-supervised world models.
Exactly.
Because up to this point, the deep learning boom relied mostly on supervised learning. You know, humans manually labeled millions of data points. A human tags an image, this is a cat, tags a sign, this is a stop sign. And the machine mathematically adjusts its weights to match the labels.
Right.
But Lacan saw supervised learning hitting a hard ceiling because you cannot manually label the physics of the entire universe.
No, it's impossible. And simultaneously, the rest of the tech world was abandoning supervised learning too, but they became obsessed with autoregressive transformers, which we now call large language models, or LLMs.
The big trend.
Yeah. The industry began pouring billions of dollars into scaling up models trained to simply predict the next token in a sequence of text based on massive scrapings of internet data.
But Lacan argued that both of those, manual labeling and autoregressive text prediction, are fundamentally flawed if your ultimate goal is true human-level intelligence.
Right. He pointed back to P.H. Child.
Oh, the baby analogy.
Yes. A baby doesn't need its parents to point to a falling cup 10,000 times and say the word gravity to understand that objects fall.
Right. They just watch it happen.
Exactly. The baby builds an internal model of the world, a literal physics engine in its mind, simply by quietly observing the raw, unlabeled data stream of physical reality.
The baby learns the sequence of the world, not just the statistical distribution of words.
Precisely.
Like, if I push a glass off the edge of a table, it shatters. Lacan argued that machines need to sit and process thousands of hours of raw video to mathematically map the underlying physics of reality.
How objects occlude one another, how momentum transfers, how light behaves. And completely free of human labels.
Right. He wanted to use self-supervised learning, where you hide a piece of the data, say, the next frame of a video, and force the network to predict it.
Yeah. By repeatedly failing and correcting its predictions about where a falling ball will be in the next millisecond, the network mathematically embeds the concept of gravity into its architecture.
And having an internal model of how the world works allows a system to actually plan.
That's the key difference. It can run simulations of the future in its latent space and predict the physical consequences of its actions before taking them.
Whereas LLMs do not plan.
No, they probabilistically generate text.
Right.
Lacan argued forcefully that text is a remarkably low bandwidth medium compared to the immense high-fidelity data stream of raw physical reality.
Human language is just a highly compressed abstraction of the world.
Exactly. Mm. You cannot learn how to ride a bicycle solely by reading a manual. You have to feel the physics of balance.
Okay, I have to play devil's advocate here, though.
Go for it.
Look at what happened from 2018 onward. ALM exploded. They are writing complex software code. They're generating stunning essays, passing the bar exam. The commercial hype is deafening, and the capabilities are undeniably impressive.
Oh, without a doubt.
So why walk away from the most lucrative, explosive software trend in history?
Well, the sources offer a fantastic analogy to explain his resistance. Trusting a language model with complex, real-world reasoning is like handing a surgical scalpel to a doctor who has perfectly memorized every medical textbook ever written, but has never physically touched a human body.
Oh, wow. That is terrifying.
Right. An LLM has swallowed the entire digital library of human output, but it has zero physical grounding. It manipulates symbols with astonishing fluency, but it has no internal concept of the reality those symbols represent.
It doesn't mathematically comprehend what it actually means for an object to be heavy or sharp or fragile.
Exactly. And because of this stubborn insistence that true intelligence requires physical grounding, LeCun found himself in a highly ironic position. He became a minority once again.
Wow, full circle.
In a field he essentially built, amidst a booming spring of AI investment, he was out in a quiet, unplanted field, developing joint embedding predictive architectures while everyone else just scaled up language models.
I mean, think about that. He survives multiple AI winters, finally reaches the promised land, watches the entire industry celebrate the harvest of language models, and loudly declares, "You're growing the wrong crop."
It takes immense intellectual courage, or perhaps immense stubbornness.
Probably a bit of both. To look at the consensus of the brightest minds in the deepest pockets in Silicon Valley and tell them they are basically building a highly sophisticated trillion-dollar cargo cult runway.
Right. He remains convinced that endlessly scaling up language models will merely result in more articulate illusions of intelligence, not the actual aerodynamics of thought.
And that search for the underlying principle is what demands the hardest, most rigorous scientific work. Like Richard Feynman noted, the easiest person to fool is yourself.
Yep. When a machine speaks to us with perfect grammar, nuanced tone, and profound eloquence, the human brain is evolutionarily hardwired to assume a mind is present.
We can't help it.
No, we can't. LeCun's ongoing legacy is his constant, uncompromising demand that we look past the eloquent text output and ask the fundamental engineering question. Does this architecture actually understand the physical weight of the world? Or is it just echoing our own words back to us?
Which leaves us with a final, somewhat haunting thought to mull over.
What's that?
If today's language models are indeed the fake runways of a modern cargo cult, if they are perfectly mimicking the shape of human words without any actual understanding of the physical reality those words describe,
right. What
is going to happen on the day a machine architecture actually does grasp the aerodynamics of reality?
That is the trillion-dollar question.
If LeCun is right, and an internal physics-based world model is the absolute prerequisite for true intelligence, does that mean artificial intelligence can never fully exist isolated inside a server rack?
Yeah.
Does a machine ultimately require a physical body, sensors, and the ability to interact with the messy physical world to ever truly think?
Well, if intelligence is inherently constructed through interaction, like Biagiat suggested, then disembodied intelligence might literally be a mathematical impossibility.
Something to think about the next time a sophisticated chatbot gives you a perfectly written, entirely ungranted answer. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the architecture of thought. We will see you next time.